Hey, you guys, doing work.
He's doing it. Look at that.
It's a pipe. Yes, welcome, welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Standby Podcast.
Who knew our target market
was moms? apparently, that's our.
We didn't find out. You don't know if you're going to come and warm up a pay. We got a mom vibe going.
So I guess our podcast is listened to in the morning. Between 11 and 10.
We're not complaining.
We love moms. We're going to have to skew our subjects now.
Well, now we can reach out to advertisers.
Yes.
Maybe there's some money in this for us.
Yeah.
What do moms need to know about?
Yeah.
I'm looking at, everybody's looking at back at us going, we're not moms, fuckface.
Well, I think we should also explain what the podcast is about.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't moms, I just wandered in.
Yes.
What's going on? Standby Podcast. Well, let's start with us, Francis.
Yes.
We are both immigrants.
Yeah, well, thank you. You said that very, like accusing.
Well, I can tell you're an immigrant.
Francisco's an immigrant. And me, I'm just white.
I'm an immigrant on the side. Nah,
yeah, we're both immigrants and comics, and we met here in L.A., and that's why we have that in common, because we don't, we should just start a podcast and talking about,
Well, we found we were drinking in the bars after shows and stuff, and we kept talking about how things are different.
Yeah.
That old trope. Aren't things different here in America?
Yeah.
And we thought maybe we can find a medium to start talking about that with, like, other comedians and other artists about, especially if they come from
the world. Yeah, especially people that are, that travel a lot, that perform a lot in the world, and then just kind of compare cultures, because I think that's the thing that we should do as human beings, just know more about the world and not just your little, town. So it's good.
That's the gist. Remember how we played? We played with calling it Shaggy and Fez. Have a podcast. Remember when we toyed with that for about 48 hours?
Yeah.
Let's do that. That's just who we are.
That would have been a different demographic. Or maybe more like Nickelodeon crowd. It's like, oh, shit.
And then we realized that maybe that 70s show was going to sue us. So.
Yeah. We didn't have the money for that.
So we went with our real names.
Yes. But yeah, so then we have the Standby Podcast, and then we've been doing it here actually at the Comedy Store for the past 4 months, which is great, because kind of like now our home, home network club.
Yeah,
podcast,
so much better sound. I don't know if
that is apartment.
We started
during
on
the pandemic.
Couch. Yes. Yeah, we started during the pandemic on my couch. I mean, I put up fairy lights. I tried to make it. I tried to create a vibe.
It's also a studio apartment, so it looks more like a porn set. Than anything else.
But yeah, it was comfy. We were slouched into the couch, and now we're here with professional equipment.
Yeah, now we're here, and with our first live recording of the podcast, so we appreciate you guys coming.
I don't know about you, but I think that's the first time ever in my career I've come up on stage with a friend, and we just started, because usually we come on and we try to tell jokes and be stand-up comedians. Very different vibe coming up here and going.
That we just have to talk. People are just listening to us, judging us, like you are right now. You're very you're looking at us like, what the fuck? I thought it was a stand-up show. Well, we're stand-ups, but we're gonna converse.
It'll
be fun.
And this is going to be a lot of fun. We've had some amazing guests on.
Yeah, we had Riz Darby from Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah.
And
DJ Qualls has been on the show.
Yes.
DJ's been in lots of stuff. He's in Legit with our guest tonight. So that's very exciting. And so was Dan Bacchino, who's also been on the show.
Yes.
So, I guess so.
Basically, listen to the podcast too. I think that's a thing to go subscribe to our YouTube and to our Instagram Standby Podcast. After this, we have a little. Their QR code. So thank you. That's for you to take. And thank you, Mom.
Thanks, Mom.
You can put it in your refrigerator, and next to the schedule for the week. Gotta pick up the kids and then listen to the podcast.
Yeah, okay, well, let's do it. Well, needless to say, say. We're very excited about this. This is far and none our best guest that we've had in the run so far. Like I said, we've had some fantastic guests, but we're really happy tonight. We've got one of the most prolific stand-up comedians working today. You guys will know him from a lot of his TV appearances. He's got an amazing podcast himself called I Don't Know About That. And he's currently on tour all around America on the Moist Tour. And we've got him here to hang out with us tonight and chat. So let's welcome to the stage Jim Jeffries, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, buddy.
Thank you. Hello.
How are you, Jim?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, everyone on your previous guest with people off my TV show. It's like you're fucking...
Yeah.
We were going down the cast list.
They were all the ones I could think of. Yeah. we're very much in Jim Jeffries' zone right now. So, yeah, man.
Thank you for joining us. Very appreciate it.
Pleasure,
you're a busy man, and thank you for making time for...
I'm not that busy on a fucking Wednesday at 8. That's sort of, you found some of my free time. I'm going to duck down and do the main room afterwards just because I'm here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just walk through the different rooms.
Well, that's what we did. It's kind of like making it easy for you.
Yeah, this is your warm-up. Yeah.
Is this what's recording it, this thing here?
Yeah, well, that one.
And you put a lot of open bottles of water around.
Yes, that one, and then those things.
Oh yeah, Blake with a phone.
We got a bit of this going on.
it's a lot of budget. Yeah, it's a big budget here. So
very professional setup.
Yeah. Well, I think this podcast is mostly about like traveling and stuff. And you're originally,
I'm also an immigrant, just
immigrant.
Like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Originally from Australia.
I went through the same hardships you probably went through. Being a white Australian, it's pretty hard. It takes a while for people to accept you. We had those dark years before Paul Hogan.
Yeah.
It's pretty rough. We don't get represented in the media over here.
Yes.
Yeah, Margot Robbie and fucking Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman. We get a few people. They sneak through the entertainment door, but we don't get much representation. There's fucking Australians everywhere. For a country of 20 million people, we're fucking everywhere. I can perform. I'll be in I'll be in Green Bay. I'll go, any Australians be one bloke? Yes. Why are you here? I left it in a woman, and now I stay in America, which you can't do anymore. They're about to reverse that. So pull out, ladies and gentlemen. That's why.
Yes, pull out, everybody. Especially for our mom audience. Pull out.
Why is this a mum audience?
I don't know.
I don't know if they like to be called a mum audience.
I don't think they do either, but it took us by surprise when the warm-up comedian, Dave Waite, a fantastic comic, but he did mention it. He called it a mom vibe.
Mom audience, but a mom vibe. I guess, round of applause. How many moms are here, by the way?
Two moms
that are proud. That are proud to be moms. Maybe the other ones didn't want to like clap.
Yeah. So maybe some of them don't know. There might be some.
That's true. So you started. So your first big move out of Australia wasn't coming to the US. You went to England.
I went to England. I lived with Jason for quite a while. I moved to England in. I can tell you the exact day I moved to England.
Yeah.
I was packing my bags. I'd moved back in with my parents. I'd been living out of home, and then I moved back in with my parents for the last 3 months to save up money for my trip to England. And I was packing my bags on September the 11th, 2001.
Oh, wow.
And for my big flight, I'd never been out of Australia, and I was like, oh, this will be exciting. And the towers came down about 10 p.m. At night. And I remember my parents were asleep, and I went, I said, you've got to wake up. The World Trade Center's fall down. And being Australian, my parents went, what's the World Trade Center? And I went, I don't know. I had to get, that was the first big flight, but they were still flying planes out of Australia. They didn't give a fuck. Yeah. No one was worried about people coming from Australia to England.
Wow, they stopped for that Icelandic volcano, but they didn't
stop
international
for that. But that's how, I always think, like, what year did I go? Oh, that's right, that happened. So it's very easy to benchmark. And I lived in the UK for 10 years, and then I've been out here for Well, 13, 14 years, yeah.
Wow. So you started in comedy in London, basically? Or
yeah,
did I
a year and a bit in Australia, and there's a comedy store in Australia, there's a comedy store in London, everybody's nicked that name, they're not affiliated in any way, but there was a comedy store in Sydney, and I was doing okay, and there was a lady, I won't say her name, because she's a nice lady, she probably wouldn't want a name mentioned, and she was a woman of a certain age, as we all are, of a... she's calling in now. She's very
That's a lady right there.
We've been mentioned.
Also, that was very like 911, like it's like, okay, I think something's happening to this. Like,
they mentioned the other comedy stores. We need to shut this down right now. No promotion for other comedy stores in the rest of the world.
Well, that was the only show in town, was the comedy store in Sydney. There was no other gigs. A city of 4.5 million people, there was one comedy club. And so if this lady was the booker, and if she didn't like you, you weren't working. And I did maybe a year of comedy in Sydney, and she was, you know, I guess she was mid-40s or something like that. Nothing wrong with that, but you'll understand as the story goes along. But she took a lot of pride in the way she looked. She's a good-looking woman. She took a lot of pride. Anyway, so I was watching. This is how fucking dumb I was. I was maybe 20 or something like that. And I was watching Mad Max Road Warrior, the second one. Right? Where they've got all those fucking feral kids, you know, like where they go and they're pumping oil in the thing. Anyway, she was one of the feral kids in that, right? And she was maybe about 14 in that film. And I saw it. And then the next time I saw her, she was like writing my check for the end of the gig. And I said, I was watching Road Warrior the other day. And she just sort of, her face went down. And I went, you must have been 14 in that. This is how fucking dumb I am, right? I mean, you must have been 14 in that. And it's the year 2000, so that would make you, and that film was made in this year, and I just shut the
fuck up.
She was just getting angry and angry and angry. Anyway, I cracked the code. I figured out how old she was, and I never worked the comedy store again. And so that was me done with the one club in Sydney. So I thought, I better move to a different country if I'm going to make this work. So that was how that
decision
don't mention women's ages and try to keep your
fucking
career,
you
dumb fuck.
A lot of you guys don't know this, that's what every comedian does. We all make mistakes in whatever town we're based in, and we just keep moving cities until eventually we find a market where it starts to work.
Yeah, like fugitives.
Just got to find a city with enough comedy clubs where you can offend enough people that you can still get work.
But, and then, I mean, you... Like, you strike me like you're a very, like, naturally funny. Did you always want to do stand-up? Like,
I wanted to do stand-up from a very young age, but it wasn't a job that I think my parents would have been happy with me doing. And I had a couple of open spots when I was 17. I did one and it went really well. And then the people at the club said, you're not old enough to be in the bar. And I said, no, I'm not. And they said, you have to bring a parent. So I rang me dad. I live with a cunt. I walked over the hallway and I said, Dad, I've done this gig. I didn't tell you I went and did it. Can you take me to the club the next time to do a gig? And so my dad came, and I remember it was raining really badly, and we showed up and there was less people than this, if you can imagine. And all the people at the open mic were also the audience members as well. And I went on and I died so badly on my ass, like just red in front of Dad, second show, and I'd been bigging up how good I was and all that. And there he is. I bring him along. Thanks, Dad. And so my dad was in the car, and my dad's a nice fella, but he went, you're good at a lot of things, but this is not for you. If you want some type of hobby or something, this could be a fun thing, but don't expect to get good at this.
My dad had the same thing.
Yeah, so I was crushed, and I didn't do it again until I was in university. And I went to university to study musical theatre at a place called Whopper, the Western Australian
Musical
Academy.
Musical theatre like Hugh Jackman?
The very same course. I was in the university that Hugh Jackman went to.
Oh wow!
And at that stage, he wasn't Wolverine. He was just doing like Oklahoma in the West End. And I remember there's this one acting teacher, and she was just like, she would reference him all the time. She'd be like, when Hugh was here, Hugh would do a thing. And I remember thinking, this fucking asshole's he's never going to be fucking anything. I have to hear about fucking Hugh all the time. Anyway, Hugh's done all right.
Wow.
So So early brush with dad, but...
So when I did the musical theatre, they put me in a couple of romantic lead roles when they did musicals, and I was trying to act real serious, but everyone was still laughing. And I thought, oh, maybe there's something in that. Yeah. So I went back to the comedy.
Nice.
I never finished the course. I got some jobs to do gold mining towns in Australia, like rural Australia, where you drive out to these places like Kalgoorlie, where it's a 12-hour drive out into the desert. And it's like 9 men for every 1 woman, you know, like it's just men who have to sit down a hole and they've got loads of money. And they have these bars, and behind the bar, there's always a topless woman called a skimpy, which is a thing in the outback of Australia. And it's not for any sexual reasons. It's just that if you take the tits away, it's a gay bar. Because it's just me. So when they're drinking, they can go, no, it's all fucking straight up. There's a pair of tits over there.
I did lots of those gigs.
Oh. They were some rough, wild west type of fucking gigs.
Wow, that's
that's an easy decision.
How does the interview go for that job?
They fly them in from the big city, from Perth. They come in.
They're like, well, you got to take up your. It's like, I don't know anything bartending.
Put on a show or anything. They just serve your beers like a regular person. They're just topless.
So it's like a Hooters
Look, I'm not justifying it. Australia has a lot of backwards things. This isn't my fault. I'm just telling you the facts.
To be fair, and I don't know if you remember this about the British circuit, but for a while, that Hyena Club in Newcastle, do you remember? There was a comedy club in Newcastle that had, they could only have comedy if they served food. So they had $1 cheeseburgers at the door, and everybody would buy a cheeseburger and then just throw it out in the bin and go in for comedy.
How do you think that story is similar to the tits behind the bar? I've got a story that's very close to that. There was a place that used to sell dollar cheeseburgers, and the audience were fucking bemused, Jason. I know it's your podcast, but I can't sit and nod along to that.
Yeah, I was going to mention about doing shows at a strip club.
Sometimes you have to do something in order to be allowed to put the comedy on.
They don't have to do the topless women. It's just a nice gesture they do for the patrons.
Otherwise,
there's no law. The Australian government didn't come in and go, make sure you have tits out.
Because if not, there's a gay bar.
Wow, that's great. I think that should be a good idea to do as a bar, right? Don't you think?
What, a topless bar?
No, your cheeseburger.
The $1 cheeseburger.
Let's take this to the British circuit. And like, you've talked a lot about your family on stage. Did you always know going into stand-up when you started, you know, developing as an act, did you know that you were going to work your brothers, you know?
Yeah, a lot of my material's from, like, my mum and my dad and my family and all that type of stuff. And, you know, I had a fairly strict upbringing, and I thought when I started doing that my mother would be very angry, but she was just happy that I had a job and was making money, so she never mentioned anything, you know. I bought him a car and that shut him up a bit.
Right.
So I sort of thought I could.
So did your dad ever got back and be like, I was wrong? Like, hey, you know.
My dad doesn't get. Okay, so I told a story recently about my dad and a prostitute that he told me. And I'm sure he wouldn't like me telling that story on stage. But he told it to me. And the next day he said to me, he goes, don't mention it's me. Because it was about my mother let him have a prostitute once, right? Which is legal in Australia, by the way, right?
Wait, as to have a priority.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty, but
I'm just learning a lot. I want to go now to Australia. There's bars with tits, you know, and like.
Yeah, you got to be married to my mum to get this special trip. Okay. But she's dead, so that fucking boat sailed, doesn't it? Anyway, so.
Constitution is legal.
Yeah, it's legal in Australia. It's a fun country, man. Okay. It's fun. Anyway, so my father told a story, and the next day he said to me, he goes, you can tell that story, but he goes, comedians, when I was young, they used to say things like, there was a guy from my town, there's a fella I once knew. So I tell the story now like this. I go, there was a fella I know who was married to my mother for 50 years, and this is what happened to him. So.
And then
So you, how many siblings do you
two,
have?
Two older brothers.
Two older brothers. Two older brothers. And the youngers. And any you have to always travel through Australia, like for holidays and stuff like that. And
yeah. Did those kind of road trips and stuff influence?
Oh, wait, you want to talk about my childhood holidays?
Well, we always ask our guests, like Reese Darby has told us about his family trips and stuff through New Zealand and everything.
Like
and
any crazy.
Okay, my family, we had a small purple car called a Tirana. Which sat five people, had vinyl seats and no air conditioning. And all we did every year was we would drive from Sydney to Brisbane, which is like 14 hours or some shit, through the fucking desert to go see my grandmother. It was hell. Like, I don't remember any holidays that were really like, and then we went to the zoo or something. Nothing was, everything was just to see this lady, you know?
And
you had to sit in the middle? Were you like, sit in the middle because you were the only
one? Yeah, I had to sit in the middle. Well, I'm about to go tour Australia, and I've got a new baby, as they all are. That's the thing about babies. They're all new. Thank you. I left it in. I kept it even though I could have gotten rid of it before the law changed. Anyway, so I'm about to go back to Australia with my 9-year-old son and my 9-month-old son and my wife and my mother-in-law, because my mother-in-law overheard me talking to my tour manager, and I said, I will need a nanny for the trip. And she went, no, I'll do it. And I'm like, ah, great. Because I really like my mother-in-law, but I don't feel like I can order her around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Not that I really, if I have a nanny, I'm not real mean. I'm like, hey, you fucking do this. I'm not like that. But yeah. I can't just go to my mother-in-law, take him to the park, will you? Yeah, I don't know.
You have to change the tone of when you say it. You're like, you can order her, but be like, would you please, mother-in-law?
No, it's a toughie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a repeat on, you had a bit of a COVID issue last time you went to Australia.
So I'll tell you this story very quickly. So I was booked to be a judge on Australia's Got Talent.
Oh.
And, well, when I say booked, it never went all the way through. But they rang me up and they said, would you like to be a judge on Australia's Got Talent? And I'm like, that is my dream job. Just judging people and just like having a buzzer that you go, and doing the gold buzzer once. You know, there was 2 weeks of training. They said you had to come 2 weeks earlier for training.
To train?
What fucking training?
Yeah. Training to
just,
judge?
Yeah, just don't say fuck. Here's your gold buzzer. Good luck. Like, what else is there to do? Anyway, so I was meant to do it, and it turned out Sophia Vergara dropped out, and so they were giving it to me.
Wow.
Now, a lot of the Americans didn't want to go because you had to quarantine during COVID for 2 weeks, and I didn't care. I was, like, happy to go. Anyway, I had the booking, and then there was an executive that had to say yes or something, and as happens in TV, they just ghosted me, and I didn't have the job, right? So I said, oh, fuck it, I'll go do a tour in Australia. I booked the time off anyway. So I took my wife, who was pregnant at the time, and we got locked in a hotel room for 2 weeks, which that's a lot of fun. If you ever get the chance to be in one room with a pregnant woman for 2 weeks where you can't walk away and all that, that's a treat for anyone.
Balcony.
Oh, no, not a balcony or a window. That's really something. Food's your only joy you have left. And so I'm sitting there and I'm watching telly, and on the telly it says, come out to the auditions of Australia's Got Talent with our new judge. And I was like, who the fuck did they get? And they go, Neil Patrick Harris. And I was like, yeah, it's a good get for Australian telly.
Yeah, yeah.
Then why didn't they just tell me? I would have gone, I get it. He's big name. Yeah, I understand. But I was pretty filthy about the whole thing, but whatever. So we get out of quarantine. Australia hasn't had a single case of COVID for about 11 months. And then they get one case, and they get 10 cases, and then they shut the entire country down once 10 cases happen, which I assume there's 10 cases in this room right now. I feel like we have definitely 10 cases.
For sure.
And so they shut the whole country down. All my gigs were cancelled. I get back on the plane. I go back on with my wife. I'm sitting there. There's literally, I'm not kidding, there's maybe 8 people on the entire plane. There's no one flying back to Australia or not because of you. And so no one was allowed out of Australia if you're Australian, unless you had an American, And so I get on the plane, there's only 8 people, and it's me, my wife, Neil Patrick Harris, and his family. And his show's got cancelled too. Fuck off, Jamie. So hey, what's that German word, Freudenschnatter or yeah, whatever the fuck?
Schadenfreude.
I had Schadenfreude out the fucking wazoo, I did.
So it all turned out to do good, yeah, because you were supposed to be the judge, and it was Neil Patrick Harris again.
Yeah, that's, I told you that.
I'm just recapping. So that.
So you got a lot to make up for on this trip, then. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you something. So we moved from London to Manchester when we were in Britain. And,
both of you.
We lived in a house together.
And do you remember?
Is this the story where the guy comes through the window with a machete? Because yes, I remember that.
Oh, it's not. It's
oh, okay,
not.
That's a different story.
I mean, we can talk about
that. No, I'm fine not talking about it. I have PTSD about that.
I wasn't going to machete.
How do you get him a machete in England?
That's good.
What do you mean, how do you get a machete in England?
I thought machete is more like a jungle thing.
It's like a big meat cleaver machete.
Oh, that's okay.
And even if it's still a junk, you
can still get them.
You're mixing up knives and guns here. You can't get guns in the UK.
Okay.
Knives they're selling all day. No problem. You just go to a kitchen store place. Fucking, you've seen Gordon Ramsay cut something. They've got them.
Yeah, but that's okay. I'm not a machete. I think I look at a machete like a big ass, like Rambo, you know, like that.
You can get them too.
You can get those too. Okay, all right.
Yeah. You get fucking swords. You ever seen the Queen knight someone?
Yeah.
They did.
How would you get one in England of all places? What, the country that took over the world?
They stole the machetes from the
Hindus. Yeah, this one's made in India. I wonder where they got it.
What happened?
I want to know what happened.
Well,
a guy came through the window with a machete, and I went wrong place, and he left. No, we had a break in. Jason was actually touring Australia at the time. Yeah. Me and another comic called Steve Hughes, and they broke in and they tied me up and they I had a little tiny cut in the thing, and then this gets a bit dark, this story, but you really pushed. they threatened to rape my girlfriend, but I was tied up on the ground, so not a lot I could do there. They stole me car. They didn't, by the way, but just they threatened to, which isn't pleasant in its own way. And they took my car and a few other things, and they got caught speeding wearing, you know, full ski masks in June. The cops caught them with their ski masks rolled up on their face and said, well, what's all this? And he said, it's me style, isn't it? Which was a pretty good defense. And they went to prison for 12 years, but that was 14 years ago, so I'd like to stop mentioning it because I'm gigging in Manchester fairly soon. They're 100% out now, so that's what happened there.
They each got an extra 2 years, too, for drug possession, didn't they?
They had drug possession. No, that's the thing. They got in trouble for drug possessions, but it was my drug.
How much you have?
They stole them, and they were like, do you know anything about these drugs? And I was like, nah. And they go, your fingerprints are over them. And I was with the cops. I went, they made me touch them.
I went to the trial. I went to support them in the trial.
I was a great witness, though.
But I do remember he was funny on the stand. I don't know if you remember this, but they had to pass around the weapons at one point. Jim's on the stand, and they passed around the machete. Was in a big tube, and they passed it around so that everybody could look at it, and the lawyers and the judge. And then the hammer was in a big paper bag, and it was at the bottom of the bag. And they passed around this bag, and everybody's looking at the bag. It goes to the judge, and the judge is like, "This bag is too big. Can we cut this in half? Or somebody find something to cut in half?" And Jim just goes, "There's a big knife right there."
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got a big bloody machete over there, mate. I said, "You got a big bloody machete over there, mate." It was the most fucking Crocodile Dundee I've ever seen.
Fantastic. So what I was going to ask you about, it's much more innocuous, but you can do the British circuit easily without driving. Right?
Let me explain it to Americans. There's trains.
That works.
And the trains go places. They're not just for kids to ride on and fucking go choo-choo. They're actually purpose-built trains. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with Americans and your lack of trains. Like, if I had the money, you build one between LA and Vegas. Wouldn't that be a good idea? You could fucking, once the train gets into Nevada, you could start gambling on the fucker, have blackjack tables in there, you get pissed the whole time. Fantastic. But you won't do it. The bullet trains as well, they go like the fucking clappers. They're wonderful things.
It's a very good idea.
Well, where's your trains? You
there's one.
You're a big country. You fucking join places up with trains.
Well, isn't Elon Musk trying to build something underground?
Elon Musk.
It's taking a while.
I'm just looking forward to his Amber Heard bed shitting story that he must have.
He's going to tweet about it.
Like, she would. That can't be the first time she's shit in a bed. There must be.
Yeah, that's
there must be. Like, no one ever does that once. Yeah. There's been some preamble in your life where you've shat in multiple beds before.
That's a pattern.
It's clearly her move.
Yeah.
I was talking about this today with somebody about, like, Paul McCartney had. Remember when he was married to that bird with one leg, Heather Mills? I know she was known for more than that, but I can't think of anything. Anyway, so he was married to fucking Heather Mills, and she tries to go at Paul McCartney because he wouldn't let me use a bedpan, right? I don't give a fuck if you got one leg. If you're fucking Paul McCartney, don't shit in the fucking bed. Hop over to the fucking bathroom. Give him some crutches. Because, no, I'm telling you, she went on Dancing with the Stars. If you can do the fucking cha-cha, you can get to the fucking bathroom. Like, without fucking laying there, just shitting in a pan next to me, and you expect me to shag you the next day as your husband? Go fuck yourself. You're not shitting in the bed.
No one's
brought that up in a long time, and I feel something needed to be said.
I don't even know if I should ask this question now. It's going to feel anticlimactic, and you'll probably just go, yes, I did. But here's what I want to say. Like, public transport's really good in Britain, and a lot of comedians are able to work all over the country.
I got a great public transport story.
This is a podcast.
I doubt very much this will be the story you want, but this is my favorite story. So I moved to England. I'd been there for about, I don't know, a week. Right, okay. And I was just getting around on the buses, right, getting on the buses. And so you come in on the front door and you leave on the back door, right? Anyway, so I'm standing there on the bus holding, looking at all the British people, you know, going around London. This fucking dog comes on and starts jumping on everybody, this scruffy looking dog. No one was doing anything. So I got all Steve Irwin on the bitch, right? And I went, get off here, you bloody runaway dog, get off. And I kicked the dog off the back of the bus. And then the door shut and the woman came on and said, where's my dog? And because in Australia, you can't have a dog on public transport. Yeah. This was a cultural point of difference.
No leash, it's just running around.
I had to get off at the next stop. She had to get off at the next stop and go back, but I didn't want to get off with her, so I went an extra stop, and then I walked back. Is that the story? I doubt that was the story.
You didn't want to pretend that you didn't do it?
No, everyone saw me. There was no pretending. Everyone was pointing at me. There was nothing to pretend.
No, that's not the story. That's probably better. Anyway. I just wanted to simply ask you, I don't know if you remember, of course you'll remember this. We were all working the British circuit, using trains and stuff, but you went away and did a show and arrived the next morning with a beater, which I think you took as payment for a gig.
A beater?
From then, no, a beater car.
That's
like
not what happened.
Okay.
A beater car.
The real story isn't quite as good. Well, it doesn't show. I had a one-night stand. I don't know if I come out
and
of this great.
She gave you the car.
No, she didn't just give me the car, but I ended up, you know, in Britain, sometimes you can end up in a fucking village, man.
Yeah.
So I was like in a village, and I was pretty hungover. And I woke up in this woman's house, like, what the fuck? And she had a car out the front with a bit of cardboard in it. I had to get out of this house. And she had a bit of cardboard in the front that she was trying to sell a car for 700 quid. I had earned 400 quid that weekend and had it in cash in my pocket, and I talked her into the discount. I may have said, I will call you. And she signed the car over for me, and I drove back, and that's how I got my first car in England.
That's amazing.
And then a lot of us started driving after that. We started
we had that car. I had that car for a while, but the speedo didn't work. It just had, it was flat like that. And so I used to think I was going like 30 miles an hour, and there's a lot of speed cameras everywhere in Britain that you just, if you drive past them, and I kept on thinking, I reckon I'm below that speed, and I could flash and get another fine. And so what I'd do is I'd say that my mother was visiting me from Australia. I stole her driver's license number when I was back in Australia, and I put that down. My mother ran up so many fines that it's illegal for her to drive. She can't drive in Britain. And I told her, and she went, oh my God, what will happen if I go back to England? I'm like, you haven't been to England in 40 fucking years. What do you think? You think all of a sudden you're going to go on a fucking big trip? She's dead now, so we beat that case.
So you were mentioning that like having trains here in the U.S., that's a thing that the U.S. doesn't have. You travel all over the world. Is there another thing that you think that the U.S. should be doing that from other countries like that?
What,
like,
more than trains?
More than trains or something else. Like a custom that people are using.
Poco sticks or something.
Machetes.
You guys have got the bird scooters and the bikes. I think that's all you can really do. I think more bikes would be good.
More bikes.
Yeah, it keeps people healthy. You go to Amsterdam, everyone's got a banging That's body true. And no one works out. And it's just because they're riding around all day with fucking tulips in their car.
That's true.
The same in Copenhagen, the same thing. Everyone's got a great ass on them, the men and the women. It's all the bike riding, man.
You were ranting to me the other night about show bags.
No, I can't explain show bags to Americans. We only have an hour and a bit. Is there any Australians here? All right, guys, where are you from?
Brisbane.
You know what a show bag is, of course. Okay. Do you know that no one outside of Australia knows what a show bag is, including New Zealanders, don't know what it is. Now, I'm going to give you a mission. Later on, just go out and try to tell an American what a show bag is. It's the most frustrating thing you'll ever do. So you think of any candy bar you can think of, right? So think of Kit Kat. There'll be a Kit Kat bag. Right, and you'll buy it at the show. Now, the show is actually a carnival, it's not the show. You following me? And the bag will say Kit Kat on it. And inside there will be three mini Kit Kats, two full-size Kit Kats, a jumbo Kit Kat, and for no apparent reason, a Mars bar. Right? And an inflatable hammer.
What?
Right? And the inflatable bat, that's in the fucking Milky Way bag or something like that. And anything, there'll be like a Kardashian's bag, there'll be any type of TV show, anything. You go in a show bag haul and you buy these things for about a fiver each, and the value of the bag is like $14. These are savings you can't get anywhere else.
But you can't call it a gift bag.
I can't explain it to you. All right, lads, what if you're down to your last dollar, what bag do you buy?
Bertie Beetle
is like a caramel koala or a Freddo frog. You know what they are? It's a lesser chocolate. It's a carob like chocolate that's filled with honeycomb and or glass. And inside the Bertie Beetle is about four Bertie Beetles and a picture of Freddo frog, and that's there to remind you what your life could be like if your parents worked harder. And that's what, and you never see a Bertie Beetle in the wild. You'll never be in a fucking convenience store going, I have a packet of Winnie Blues, a pie, and a Bertie Beetle. They're only in bag form. See, I told you they'll never understand.
Yeah, I'm lost. I don't know. I'm curious about the Bertie Beetle.
Just Google show bags Australia. It's the best. There'll be literally hundreds of the things. It's a fantastic bit. You guys have Halloween. We have show bags, and they're killer, man. It's the best.
See, I want to call it just a bag of candy.
It's not just a bag of candy. The bag describes who you are.
Fuck you, JJ.
Because it's not just bags of candy, there'll also be a gag bag, and in the gag bag we'll have that gum that slips your finger. it'll have a fake dog shit, a fake vomit, and that wire that you put on a $5 so bill like that makes the money scoot around.
So it's a piñata bag.
It's a fucking show bag.
It's a piñata bag?
When you destroy a piñata, all that shit comes out.
I'll tell you something about piñatas, right? I've tried to indulge in this cultural thing. It's fucking stupid. Every time I see it in the movies, there's always some kid blindfolded with a stick. First of all, well done on the health and safety. Right? Let's give a bat to a blind kid with other kids standing around and hope for the best. But then you hit the fucking pinata, you have to fucking hit it like 300 times. They're not an easy break.
No.
They're not an easy break. And in the end, what comes out of them? A couple of fucking...
Showbags.
No, Mexican candies, which are never that great, let's be honest.
Are they as good as Birdie?
They're salty.
No, they're always like little hard things. Yeah. Like you really peaked with Coca-Cola. You do the best. But the candies I'm not down with. But you hit it with a bat. And then it falls. Then you got candy on the floor. Oh, what a celebration. Floor candy.
Yeah. Which are show bags. Because then you get a bag and they become a show bag.
Yeah, but does the bag... does the bag have the picture of your face? See, it says so much about you as a person, the bags you decide to buy.
Oh, there's different types of bags.
Yeah. That's the first thing I said. Every candy bar you can think of, and then they'll just be like, Cadbury's will just do one, which will be good, and you know, it's all good stuff. Just Google it, you'll see. It's very self-explanatory.
I look forward to the Jim Jefferies show bag.
I was thinking of doing them on my tour. And having Jeffy Showbags, and then I have like a cunt mug in it. I sell mugs that say the word cunt on it because I'm synonymous with that word. I know that this is not a word that Americans like, but cheer up, you cunts. So I do that. I've always argued that the word cunt is less offensive than the word bitch because the word cunt can be said with affection where bitch cannot. So you can go, oh, you're a good cunt, you. Oh, you're a right cunt. You're a good cunt. You should meet my friend. She's a right cunt, she is. She's really good. But if I go, you should meet my friend. She's a bitch.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, she's a bitch. There's no friendly way to say bitch. Thanks, mate.
It's a dog, it works.
So, and then, like, is there any, when you travel, because you travel so much, is there any, like, superstitious or anything that you do that when you travel or anything that you or any sentimental items that you bring with you, you know, that always
not really. I have a few sort of, I'm not one for views. I'll take whatever hotel room will have me first. I'd like to just check in early. When they go, sorry, your lakeside view hotel room is not, I just go in there, shut the curtains and
right.
I'd like to say this in a less crude way, but masturbate a lot.
That's
what all comedians do. Try to break your record, see if you can do it. You make a game of it.
So that's kind of like the thing that you do on the road, I guess.
Right? What do you do on the road?
Yeah, masturbate. I don't try to break my record, but I do masturbate.
But because you can't break it?
I'm
too old.
How are you going to break the record when you were 12 years old? You know, like, that's what you were, like, when you were 12
that,
years old, you were jerking.
Was that your peak?
I was jerking a lot, jerking off a lot. Do you want me to tell you how I learned how to masturbate? Yeah,
Through fucking the simple fact that you touch your penis and it feels nice?
No, I touched it.
You learned how to masturbate.
Well, I didn't.
Did you never wash your dick?
Well, it happened in the shower. Like, I got it against the wall. It brushed against the wall. And I'm like, whoa, this is
Was this a very
good.
Thin shower?
No.
My dick against the wall.
Well, my dick reached
to the... first time brushing your dick against anything?
Yes. And then I was like, fuck, I can't get out of this bathroom.
The wall was the nickname for his mother. She was a big woman. Donald Trump wanted to put her on the border.
But yeah, so do you masturbate in the road?
Because you travel with him, so.
When,
when there's time, we don't do it together. We don't time it, or we don't check into the hotel and go, I'll check in with you after we masturbate.
Now that I have, you know, because I have a baby at the moment, I just sleep, man. I just love the hotel room because it's peace and quiet, and no one waking me up, and I just try to enjoy it. I watch a little bit of crappy TV, or I like to watch local news is one thing. I like to see Good Morning Cleveland and shit like that, which is where I'm going tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh yeah, you're reporting Cleveland.
Yeah. Wait until you get there, Aussie boys.
No, I think there's a lad from Cleveland in the back. All right, it's your podcast. You got to keep it going. I'm only here to do the answers. So if there's a lull in the conversation,
but I
wanted
to really
ask. I pack very light.
You're not superstitious. You're not superstitious at all.
No, I'm not superstitious. I don't worry about silly things like that.
Were you superstitious?
If I'm on the road, two pairs of underwear, two pairs of socks, two pairs of pants, two of everything, and that's me done.
How about when you started comedy? Is that a thing that you're like, I'm going to wear this shirt because it
makes
me funny?
I did. I had a leather jacket that towards the end smelt really bad because I couldn't afford anything else. I still had that leather jacket. I wore through the armpits, all the leather had gone and all that type of stuff. But it doesn't fit me, of course. Now I'm much fatter. But I had a leather jacket that I, you know, but there is that thing where you wear a shirt, you have a bad gig, I'm never wearing that shirt again. Mm-hmm. That's the reason the jokes didn't work, was that dumb ass shirt.
Mm-hmm. See, that's a little bit of a superstition,
yeah.
Then. Like,
yeah, but not superstition, because that's the reason the gig didn't go well.
But what if the gig go well? You're mixing
up science and superstition.
Oh. Well, I believe in that science too. I always have to wear clothes that have been broken in. I have to be luckier. Stage. Yeah, for sure.
I had a Superman t-shirt when my first open mic things because I had a joke and I can't remember what the joke was, but I thought, oh, I can't lose that joke, so I just wanted
to wear the thing. I used to wear like a bracelet, like a leather bracelet, because I thought for some reason that would make me funny.
Made you look tough?
Made me look tough and funny, but obviously it didn't work at all. I just wear it on my ankle.
I used to not be able to eat before I went on stage.
Eat?
I couldn't. But now I can walk up eating a fucking turkey leg. It doesn't bother me. But at the time, I used to also need to shit right before I went on stage. I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you the last thing that still happens to me right before I go on stage, and I don't even feel nervous, but my dick goes back in like a turtle. Right before I go on stage, I'm never at full swing before I go on stage, and I think that's because my dick thinks we're about to have a fight. Better get into a protective. I really think that's what it is. I think it thinks we're about to get into an altercation. You're all stressed out. Better scrunch up, protect yourself.
All right.
So I don't have a nice flaccid dick before I go on stage.
I don't think most comics do. I don't think your mind's on your dick size when you're hitting the stage.
No, but I've just done enough shows to know this is what's happening.
Yeah, your blood's going to your brain.
No, hardly. I must have been nervous about this. My dick's at full mast right now.
years ago, there's a comedian, I can't mention his name now, but he's doing he was doing 2-hour shows, and everybody was in awe of him. And I have to say, you do a great show, at least 90 minutes when you're on stage.
Yeah.
How have you decided, how do you decide to arrive at that amount of time?
I'm doing about 2 hours at the moment, just because I had so long to write this tour because of the COVID, you know, and so... and then I think when you do theatres, you have to do at least an hour and a half. People have paid a lot of money to see you, and you can't shortchange them. But I always think about the people who have been dragged along by someone else and they're not enjoying themselves, because that 2 hours must go real fucking slow for them. Yeah, I always think that must be a hard time, those poor bastards. Yeah. Like, I've had people in the meet and greets that are like, no, I don't need a photo. They've just been poor for them.
That's all right.
Glad you had fun. I don't drink anymore, but I do take edibles. So what I do is, after I finish the show, I take an edible right before the meet and greet. The meet and greet's normally 100 people, so it takes about an hour. And by the end, I'm pretty stoned for those last 10 people. I'm pretty stoned for the last 10 people. I had a couple the other day, and they walked up and they were like, we're your biggest fans. We're so excited to meet you. Oh my God, I can't believe we get to meet you. And I said, oh, that's great, blah, blah, blah. And I chatted to him. I chatted to him for so long that they finished the conversation.
Oh,
they went, well, it was nice. Okay, you better see the other people. And I was like, fucking, how fucking boring must have I been to have someone pay to meet me and then they got bored.
That's now. So you travel. Obviously, you're doing a tour right now. There in the U.S. Is there a favorite destination in the U.S. and also in the world that you like?
My favorite destination in America is Boston. I've just always had good times in Boston. They're nice, quiet people. I've recorded a couple of specials there. I did my special Bear was recorded there, and they were the first place for me to start selling theaters was Boston. They've always supported me. I'm a big fan of...
Why do you think that? Why are you with us?
Because I feel like they're very close to being Australian. Well, they're like... They're in a city, but they're rough as guts, man. They're just like Australians. Yeah. They're just like...
They're most swearing per capita.
They're metropolitan, but with a crusty edge. I like the Bostonians, man.
They
have great comedy clubs that they've always produced. Yeah. You know... Yeah. Louis C.K., Bill Burr, mm-hmm. You know, a whole lot of people would come out of Boston, man.
Yeah.
And how about in the world?
They swear like fucking truckers.
I like London. London's sort of, you know, and I'm very fond of going back to, when I do the tours, I'm very fond of performing in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And Sydney always feels like, so London, Sydney, and London... Sydney and Manchester always feel like they have some level of ownership over me because I lived in those three cities, and they always show up for me. They always sell a lot of tickets, and they're always, you know, you get a few local references in, but I always feel at home in those three cities when I perform.
Right, that actually brings me to something I wanted to ask you about, because speaking of comedy over there, do you miss, I know you don't do the clubs much anymore, but do you miss comedy with breaks? You know, the way it worked at clubs compared to America.
Americans will never quite get the concept of
intermission.
So this is okay, how do I explain? So in a comedy club in Britain, you will have an interval in the middle, right? Now this is a good thing because then you can go have a piss and you can buy more alcohol and then you'll see some more comedians. American shows just run. And then what happens is you get your check handed to you. So the added problems there is you have a waitresses or waiters in the room. You also have the checks going down, so everyone's confused and trying to cut, mm-hmm. you know, split a bill. But the good thing, and I think the Americans think if we stop it, they'll stop buying drinks. Like this whole idea you go into a comedy club here in America, it says 2-drink minimum. Do you know how fucking offensive that would be to a British person to sit at a table where they go, make sure you have 2 drinks? And you'd be like, what the fuck are you trying to say? Right? But what they do is in Britain, they go, you can't buy drinks during the performance. You can only buy them at the beginning of the show and you can only buy them in the interval. And I think the Americans think that they'll sell less drinks because of this, but that's incorrect. Yeah. People think
they stock up.
People think they're going to drink more than they are. So the next half of the show is only going to be an hour 20, but people will buy 5 beers like, oh, I'm not going to be able to get drinks again. So when they clear out the comedy clubs, there's just fucking full drinks all over the tables that people have spent. And I reckon they move more drinks.
I also
and they get tips during the breaks as well with the waitress.
And also when you're a young comic, an interval is very nice to meet girls. Really? You know, because you do the show and then after you stand around just waiting for someone to talk to.
And they also told me that also in England and London, like, there's no intros to the... Like, you don't intro...
Oh, yeah, you don't want to get a big build-up as a comic.
There's an intro here. So Americans will give credits. They'll go, tell him I've been on Live in Gotham, I've been on this, I've been on that show, I performed at blah, blah, blah. And I think Americans respect that because you hear that, oh, this person's done things, where the British people hear, all right, fucking show off, let's see what you've got. You know, and so it works against you, it feels too braggy, and they don't like that. So that's your name.
Just your name and be funny. That's fucking
and have you ever considered doing any shows in Latin America? touring over there? I just don't like
the pinata culture. No, I've done some shows in Mexico, but I've never done Central America, but I've never done any shows in South America.
Yeah, because you could.
And I would like to.
Do like Chile and Argentina and
I've seen the World Cup. I know about these places, but
I'm just saying the countries to be safe at.
That's the whole thing. South America.
I'm from Venezuela, but I'm like, yeah, don't go.
You probably won't get kidnapped. It's cool. I would like to go. I've just never been invited. I'm doing a tour at the end of the year throughout Asia. I'm doing like everywhere but China. And this is the second time I've done this tour, but I won't do China because China want a transcript of your show before you go and perform. And it's like, you know what? Fuck you. Fucking gonna get. Because that says to me that they're willing to arrest you if you say the wrong thing. So yeah, I'm not going to do that. And then there's other places like Thailand's cool. The only rule that Thailand gives you is don't mention the prince. They really like the prince. And you're like, all right, I can stay away from that, you know.
What about if you have a bit about Prince, the singer?
Oh, you can mention him. Okay. You can mention him. They're not huge fans of Prince, the singer, I don't think. Because of Netflix... Everyone, 5 years ago, you couldn't tour Asia. There wouldn't be enough people who would know who you are to come and see you, or that had even watched really English-speaking stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. But now with everyone getting the specials, you can literally go anywhere and people will know who you are and they'll come and see you.
It's great. It's great. Cool. I think we're almost...
Yeah, unless you have an additional...
No. I mean, I think we covered the piñata section.
Yeah. That's always a section.
That's always a section on the podcast, the piñata section.
Well, buddy, we always have... Thanks for being an amazing
guest. Thanks for having me. I had a blast.
We have one...
Yeah, thank you for doing this.
Yeah. We always have one final question that we like to ask our guests before they take off, and it is, do you have a favorite piece of travel advice that you like to give to people, or maybe you even received it once, you're like, that's something to live by.
Never pack cocaine on your body, put it in a condom up your ass.
That's important. All the moms writing it down. All right, excellent.
Can you put it in a show bag?
No. It actually is a Coke show bag.
What a Coke show bag, man.
Thanks, Rich.
No, well, thank you. Give it up
for
Jeff. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you,
man.
Thank you, everybody, here for joining us. Our first live one of this podcast, Stand By Podcast. We're on... all the platforms, iTunes.
First time we did it in front of a human being.
Yeah.
I mean, we do it in front of our producer and our techs and stuff, but we don't consider them human beings. Yeah, so I've done it in front of you guys.
Well, thank you. Remember to go to that QR code. You can find all our information in there. Follow us and keep having. Listen to the podcast.
Yeah, jump in, engage, send us questions too. We do read questions out on podcasts and stuff when you have something for not necessarily an upcoming guest, but just questions that you want to ask people and throw them a curveball.
Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great
Thanks, guys. Thank you for coming.